Happy Sabbath. Hope everyone's doing well. It's a nice day out. We should be outside, but finally summer has arrived. The rain's gone. A whole week without rain. Is it possible? Our culture in the United States is changing. I think we're all aware of it. We're bombarded with opinions from all angles, be it at work, at school, and on TV, in the movies, in sports. Everyone has a political agenda. Everyone has a voice. Everyone has a side. We're in a culture war, is what they call it. And culture wars have casualties as well. Missing in action, killed in war, whatever you might call it. But it's been called cancel culture. We have people that are canceled. We cannot talk about them because of something that they have said that is morally bad in the view of the masses, or at least the outspoken masses, on social media, in the news, TV, whatever it may be. It can happen to anyone at any time. And usually what is said is not great. Usually what is done seems bad. But the idea of cancel culture, is it good? Is it a godly thing? Is it something we should participate in? Should we be looking for the next person in our society to screw up and call them out on it? Cancel them. Oftentimes when they're affected by this, they lose their jobs. They are banished from their career entirely. Any kind of public life is gone. If they're famous, they lose their fame. Their families might be split up over it. Their lives as wrecked as possible. Is this a new idea? A new phenomenon? We'll take a look and we'll see that it's not really that new of an idea, getting rid of your enemies in a way that doesn't involve killing them, but rather public shaming and harassing them. And today I'd like to take a look at that and how we should react to it as Christians, because it's coming to the church's doorstep. It really seems like just a matter of time. In a society rapidly changing its Christian morals, how should we react? And as the old saying goes, what would Jesus do? Let's take a look. Turn over to Matthew 10, verse 22. We'll start here. Matthew 10 and verse 22. Jesus is talking to his disciples. He actually just gave them their kind of mission for life, and that is to go out and to preach. He gave them the power over unclean spirits in verse 1 of chapter 10 to cast them out and to heal all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease. He gave them this commission, and then he gave them some warnings to follow. We'll skip to verse 22. And he says, "And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved." Hated by all for my name's sake. In America, we haven't been hated by all for his name's sake yet. We've grown up in a society that has Christian roots and has adapted some of those principles, and it's been fairly easy, but things seem to be changing. And this message and this warning can be applied to us, not just his disciples, in a society that was hostile to that message at that time. We live with religious freedoms, freedom of speech, but these things are quickly becoming challenged by different groups because different groups have different wants. And so these things are being contested, and we're seeing it labeled as hate speech. That's a very interesting word considering Christ said we will be hated because he was hated. Let's back up to verse 17. Verse 17, "But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in their synagogues. You'll be brought before governors and kings for my sake, as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you should speak, for it will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Now brother will deliver up brother to death, and father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. Not quite in our society is this happening, but it's slowly, you hear different stories right now. It's not widespread, where people are brought before courts for different things, for having their religious beliefs and others being in conflict with those beliefs. We see brothers going against brothers, fathers and children having controversy as well. But ultimately, what does this remind you of? For me, it reminds me of Christ's story, right? He was brought before councils. He was brought before the government of the day. And his brother betrayed him, Judas. Christ gave a warning and he said, these things are going to happen to me and they're going to happen to you. And so what do we do with this? How do we react to it? John 15, 18 through 21 gives a similar idea. Just flip over there really quick. John 15, 18 through 21. This is right before his death. It's at the Last Supper. He's speaking to his disciples. And he says, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. Almost an exact copy of what he said before. If you were of the world would love its own. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they would keep yours also. But all these things they will do to you for my name's sake, because they do not know him who sent me. And so this is an exact copy, almost word for word, from what he's saying and the warning he gave them at the beginning of their mission he gave. And at his time comes to an end and he's delivered up. He's reflecting on that same ideas that he was talking about before. We'll flip back to Matthew. I should have had you hold your place. Matthew 10, we're not quite done there. And I'll just read verse 24, and he says, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. So that, again, correlates with John 15. But now, what do we do with this? So he gives this warning, but what can we do? Matthew 10 and verse 16, he gives us a little idea. He says, behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Let's dissect this, because this verse I found very fitting for this topic of cancel culture and how to respond and react in it and how to go about living and still preaching the truth and talking about Christ. He sends us out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Well, we've had a lot of wolves in sheep's clothing in the society. It was popular to be morally good in our society. But that is changing because we're progressing past what Christian morals teach. We're becoming better than Christian morals in society. And the wolves' teeth are starting to show. And we'll see it. Sheep are the wolves' prey. And so what can we do as sheep? At this point, you would expect Christ to say, trust the shepherd, look to me, and I will protect you. But instead, he says, therefore, he gives us a call to action. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. He tells us what to do. Wise as serpents. First thing I think of is actually Satan in the Garden of Eden when I hear serpent. He was at least in the form of a serpent. And he went against Eve. Now we shouldn't model his behavior because he lied and deceived and was all sorts of cunning. But he was aware of the situation. We learn later on that Adam wasn't deceived by Satan. He went after who he could deceive, and Eve. And she persuaded Adam later. He is very strategic in the way he went about that situation. And as serpents, they kind of, you know, slither back and forth, kind of finding the right way, finding the right opening. And so we have to be wise. Solomon tells us, answer a fool according to his folly and don't answer a fool according to his folly in the exact same breath. And so how do we do that? We have to discern the situation. We have to think things through, and we have to be wise and understand, how am I being approached by another person in this situation? We have to be on the lookout for these things, because attacks are coming. Second part, harmless as doves. Now, a dove seems pretty harmless to me. Like, I don't know if I could think of a more harmless animal than a dove. There's probably one out there, but it's pretty harmless seeming. But this word for harmless isn't exactly what comes to mind when we think harmless. It's not weakness. It's more a perception of that you wouldn't do harm to someone. It's actually the Greek is an unmixing, being unmixed from evil or with evil. And so it's a purity. It's a peace and a purity. Doves often are characterized that and symbolize those things. But even still, peace can seem like we aren't being aggressive at all. We aren't willing to be defensive or pacifist, kind of an idea. But that's, again, not exactly what's being described. Even in our society, we have the UN, and the UN's fighters are called peacekeepers. Well, they aren't aggressors, they aren't going out and making war, but they are willing to stand up and defend freedoms and things, or at least that's the goal. That's the idea behind the name. And so we have to be able to discern and be wise about the time that we need to keep the peace, and at times when we need to keep your peace, and maybe back away from a situation. As you read through Christ's accounts, he wasn't going around from town to town and shouting in the square to repent or you're going to hell, as Christianity can be boiled down to in college campuses or maybe on a street corner. And we wouldn't necessarily go up to a person, although I've heard people interact with people like that, and you're not going to go anywhere trying to preach truth to them or teach them anything. Their whole goal is to be controversial, stir up emotions. Christ spoke to great crowds in sermons. They were there by choice. They were there to hear what he had to say. Some of them might have been there for the free food, the miracles. He didn't go and seek an argument with the greatest thinkers in society. He stayed in a very small local region. He sought out the outcast of society, the dejected, the brokenhearted, and he dealt with them personally. He looked for faithful people who could have their lives changed by the hearing of his words, the seeing of his healings, and the benefiting of his miracles. Matthew 12 and verse 9, if you turn over a couple pages, we'll take a look at one of these examples where someone was trying to trip him up. He had this come to him all the time, and he always gave the perfect answer, and wouldn't that be great if we could always give the perfect answer? Now, when he had departed from there, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man who had withered hand, and they asked him, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" That they might accuse him. So we are given an inclination of what the motive is here. And he said to them, "What man is there among you who has one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value then is a man than a sheep? Therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." And he stretched out his hand and he heals the withered hand. So Christ knew that he was coming up to be accused. This wasn't a shock to him. But he wasn't, he gave the truth. He wasn't trying to cancel this person that came up to him and say, hey, he didn't attack this man. He spoke the truth, and then he healed the hand. He did the act. There wasn't a strong rebuke in this moment. He would have had every right. Christ rarely dealt with people that were even accusing him in that way. The only person, and I don't know if there's an exception, I was trying to think about this really this while preparing this message and trying to think of Christ really coming down hard on someone, like an individual. And the only person I could think of was Peter when he said, "Get behind me, Satan." And that was his disciple. That was someone that was coming to him thinking he was doing and saying the right thing. But he had to teach him and tell him, that is very wrong what you're thinking. That was the time. That was probably the harshest he was with any individual that's recorded. Maybe there was some instances where it was unrecorded. Now, you also might go to the "Woe Are You Pharisees" chapter, because he spoke very harshly against those false teachers. And that's true. But that was the ideas that they brought. He attacked their ideas. He attacked them for being hypocrites. He never really honed in on one individual Pharisee. Now, I don't know, maybe he did. But in that chapter, it's Pharisees. It's the group. It's the idea of hypocrisy. Beware of this. Beware of these teachers. He really hit the teachers. He really hit people going and teaching wrong. But in terms of an individual that he came into contact with that was even trying to maybe trip him up, it usually was just, this is the truth of what the statement, the challenge that you're trying to come against me with. Now let me go and do what I came here to do. So he knew when to keep the peace. He knew when to go ahead and stand up for the truth and how to maneuver that. He was wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. We have to be careful, because it's so easy in today's world to go and attack an individual, to go on attack and I can't believe what they said. I can't believe what they believe. Because God's plan is for everyone. Not in this world, not in this lifetime, but ultimately it's for everyone. Christ didn't cancel individuals. He worked with them where they were, and he moved forward. He was pure and peaceable and knew the time to drive away money changers in the temple and when it was time to heal the withered hand. If you go turn over to John 8, this is a very classic, in my mind, this is like the ultimate cancel culture story. John 8, 1. Start at the very beginning here. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Now early in the morning, he came again into the temple, and all the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. Then the scribes and Pharisees brought him a woman caught in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in adultery in the very act." We always pause here and say, well, where was the man? Because if she was caught in the act, then the man also must have been caught in the act. And by the law, both were to be killed. So there's already some funny play here. Verse 5, "Now Moses in the law commanded us that such things that such should be stoned. But what do you say?" So they're bringing him an argument. Are you a just human? Do you believe in justice? Do you believe in the law? This idea is still argued today between a just God and a merciful God. Same arguments. Continuing in verse 6, "This they said, testing him, that they might have something of which to accuse him." So there's their motive. "But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground with his finger, as though he did not hear him. So when they continued asking him, he raised up and said to them, 'He who is without sin among you, let him throw the stone first.' And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. Then those who heard it, being convicted by their conscience, went out one by one, beginning with the oldest even to the last. And Jesus was left alone and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had raised himself up and saw no one but the woman, he said to her, 'Woman, where are those accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you?' She said, 'No one, Lord.' And Jesus said to her, 'Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more.'" So we know this story very well. But what were the Pharisees trying to, or it was Pharisees, I believe, that came. Yeah, scribes and Pharisees. They were trying to cancel not only this woman. They didn't really care about this woman, that she was just a prop in their little game to try and cancel Christ. They wanted to get rid of him. They wanted to get rid of his followers. And so that's a warning also. To get to Christ, you have to cancel Christianity, right? You have to go after Christians and say, look at how bad and how morally wrong they are. It's been done with the Crusades, or any time someone has used a poor example of what a Christian looks like or is. And it's been used as a tool against, it's a quiver in the bow for the enemy. But notice, Christ doesn't distance himself from the woman. He knows what the Pharisees are doing. He's understanding. He's wise as a serpent. He's not concerned, oh, if I don't say, yeah, she needs to be stoned, the law, that's got to be upheld. No doubt he's not doing away with the law here. But he didn't distance himself and say, I can't be around sin. I'm too morally high for this. No. He understood the situation. He wove his way through it and acted the best way possible to move forward for not only himself, but also for the woman. Where are you in the story? Where would you place yourself? Are you the woman? Are you Christ? Are you among the men that brought the woman? Oftentimes when we look at history or look at stories, it's helpful to put ourselves in the place of the villain or the evil person, the enemy. Not to learn from them by any means, but to learn what you're capable of. Because humans are capable of a lot of wrong and a lot of evil. There's a book, I haven't read it, can't recommend it or anything, but I've been told that it's good. It's called Ordinary People. And it's actually about men that served in, I think it's Ordinary Men. It's about men that served in Nazi Germany. And they were just ordinary people from some city, but they did atrocious things. And it's the lessons that we have to learn when we see and we look. When I read, I have a moral high ground. When I read history, it's, oh man, I would never do that. But I'm reading about it. When I read and I think of Peter betraying Christ, oh, I would never betray Christ. 3 times? Peter, what's wrong with you? You were even told this was going to happen. I would never do such a thing. But probably would. Is there an individual you'd really like to see canceled in today's culture? I'm sure one comes to mind for everyone pretty quickly, at least. But we can't get behind that train. That's not our purpose. That's not our fight. We want them to trip up and be shown their evil deeds, their wrong ways to the masses. They'll get what they deserve. It's tempting at times. But it's not what Christ would have exhibited in his demeanor and his attitude and by his works. Let's shift to today and focus on today a little bit. Facebook, social media, they're great and they're terrible. They're great for keeping connected, but man, are they really easy to stir up strife and conflict. I've gotten lost in the comments section of a post that I didn't create, and it seems personal, right? But this person needs to know this. No, they probably already have heard it. You got to stay out of the comments. That's my best suggestion. We're not there. You know, posting on social media, I was talking to a friend about this actually this week, and she said, you know, it's kind of like going to your neighbor, either in your neighborhood or out to your city, and just start yelling whatever you think as loud as you can. That's what Facebook's like. But it seems directed right at you when you're reading it. It's so weird. But it's like, my mind instantly went to like, oh, if a dog's barking in the neighborhood, it's super annoying. And you're like, why doesn't someone take care of that dog? And then you have your dog out to go to the bathroom and it starts barking. And then the other neighbor's dog's barking and suddenly all the dogs in the neighborhood. You don't let your dog just sit there and bark, or at least, I don't know, maybe some people do. But you pull your dog inside or you tell it to be quiet. We don't have to respond to everything. Not everyone was meant to hear these words and respond well to them in this lifetime. Christ, Mr. Barker spoke a couple weeks ago about why Christ spoke in parables. It's for some people to hear. Some people weren't meant to understand. Not right now. We have to know when it's time to be defending the peace and be peacekeepers, and when we need to keep our peace and to hold back. Bite our tongue, to move on, to get out of the comments section. Maybe just do a like and get out. Why is it important? Why is it important that we're careful on social media and these things? It's arrows in the quiver. Because cancel culture goes way back. Posts. He said, she said, it doesn't matter. Nothing's off the table. And also, in the heat of the moment, you might say something you regret. And then it's, oh, they gotcha. Because Christ, when he was brought before, he never had a, oh, I got you moment. You said this, you went too far. He was unmixed with evil. He was pure. He was harmless as a dove. And in that same example, we have to be. We can't have that, oof, they gotcha. We have to be able to stand up for the truth, but not be out looking for a fight. We have to be able to discern the times to plant a seed and be a spiritual farmer and let God do the growing, and when we need to be a spiritual warrior and defend the truth and cut down the arguments. Lastly, let's take a look. Go back to Matthew, if you would, Matthew 10. Or is that where I want to go? Yeah, that's fine. We'll just go there. I don't know if we're going to stay there, but we're going to go there. We talked about going up against governments. We know Christ went up against a government and the ruling bodies. And it says that the Holy Spirit is going to work for us in those times. Verse 19, when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you should speak, for it will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. And so there's going to be tough times. There's going to be times where we don't know which way to go, and we have to rely on that Spirit. Just remember that we do have the mind of Christ working in us. And when you look at Christ's story, and you look at when he was brought up against the governments of his world, he spoke very little. He spoke enough to defend himself and to question back, but he wasn't arguing until he was blue in the face because he had all the reason to do so. He had no legal reason to be tried and no legal reason to be put to death. Pilate himself said he wanted to let him go, but the crowd said, no, I find no fault in him. But he said very little. Suddenly, in the Gospels, it goes from mostly red lettering to mostly black lettering. But then we also have an account in Acts, a few chapters later after the Gospel. And we see Stephen, who went up against the Sanhedrin, essentially their Congress of the day. And he was brought before them and he told them the history and the truth. His face shone like an angel. Go ahead and turn back to Acts. It's Acts 5. Take a look at it. And we'll just see real briefly. This is an awesome scripture to go through if you haven't in a while. But Acts 5 and Stephen's example, talk about wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. I thought of Stephen and I thought of Samuel also when I first thought of that. Those two men just came to my mind. Oh, I'm actually meaning chapter 6 is actually what I wanted. Should have wrote it down. Yeah, I'm looking for it. It said, maybe it was actually, it might be earlier. Well, it's through chapter 6. Essentially, I saw it, I just read it right before I came up here. But he's being brought before, and it says that the Holy Spirit is working through him and with him. And so we see these two different scenarios where Stephen essentially did argue till he was blue in the face and he got stoned for it, But he defended the faith. He was a peacekeeper. He was harmless. But he went a different route than Christ did. And that's okay, because the situation warranted it. Because people in Acts were told, you can't preach this anymore. Christ, we know, he wanted to, no doubt. If he had any kind of wanting to be a man and being human nature and wanting to stand up for yourself, maybe that was partly why he was praying so intently and so hard in the garden the night before, was, help me to keep my tongue shut. Help me to get through this and just bite down and do this, because this isn't right. So we see that there has to be wisdom. You have to understand the situation that you're in, and we have to maneuver that carefully. We have to be able to discern our situation and be led by God's Spirit. And as the culture war continues to rage on, we must keep in mind we have been sent out as sheep in a world full of wolves. They're beginning to show their teeth. And to survive, we have to follow the example of our shepherd and be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove.